You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore.
You're listening to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma, KTAH FM 101.9. I'm Steve Niebel, filling in for David Gilmore. Today, we're featuring Kristen Berger. She's the author of 6 poetry collections, including Changing Woman, Changing Man, A High Desert Myth, at Nightjar Press, Refugia, Persian Pony Press, Echolocation, Cirque Press, How Light Reaches Us, Aldrich Press, and Earthwork, forthcoming from the Poetry Box in August. She'll be reading from Earthwork today. She's a recipient of residencies from Playa, OSU's Shot Pouch, H.J. Andrews Experimental Forest, and Starkey Experimental Forest and Range. Kristen's work is influenced by all Pacific Northwest wild and interconnected landscapes. A former member of the Women Identified editorial collective, Voice Catcher, and co-host of the Lentz Farmer Market Poetry Series, Kristen believes in the resiliency and impact of art and writing through and sustained by community. So welcome, Kristen Berger.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So today, I guess we'll start off with Earthwork. So why don't we just start off with How to Coax an Aging Heart?
Sure. How to Coax an Aging Heart. It can't get much better than this. Blood pumping in, out. Electric rigging, keeping hearts time, the clocked guesswork of how many beats we are given, the attacking equation that startles our head from the pillow on a weekday, workaday night. In the dream, I held my heart hollowed like a bell pepper, flensed of blood and pale, not bruised like I assumed from all that syncopation. I had the chance to score it, quarter it, open the delicate chambers free. I took a shard of obsidian and pared away all fat, plaque, and gristle that stuttered blood on its way to lung, limbs, brain, and memory. Skin that longed to be flush, scraped away all hitches of love and air to set the flow free. The heart out of body seemed so tame, drained of the heat I tantrumed through with my regular breaking. It had no advice left. I was careful not to puncture, respectful of each valve's slippery duty. I was not careless with this traumatized bird in my palms. I placed the heart of me back into its cage to live out the trembling blank days, each to be mercifully better than the last. I was deft for some ancient reason.
So I wondered about the bird, where that came from.
Well, birds are in a lot of my poems. I love them and watch them and study them. But I think that the image of a bird in its cage, you know, that is basically, you know, what's kind of trapped in our bodies. We have this little fluttering animal in there. And I don't know, it seemed like the most, I don't know if it's logical, but it just made sense to me to have the heart be a little bird.
Okay. I guess let's just move up right along to calling my mother up north. Where is she up north?
So this is up in northern Michigan. I'm from Michigan, and I've lived out in the Portland area for the last 28 years, but I'm from Michigan, and we have a cabin up in just south of the Mackinac Bridge. And so during the pandemic, you know, she was quarantined with my sister, but she had to check on the cabin up north. There was a big push to not have anyone from downstate going upstate to infect anybody. So she had to do it really quickly and without contact with anyone, but she had to check on the cabin during the winter. So And that was that time of, you know, just calling people, making sure everyone was safe, almost especially, you know, your loved ones every day. So this was calling my mother up north, waiting for the vaccine. The thread I grip is tensile tight, my mother's voice up an octave. At the lake's edge, the sweet spot of reception. At the lip, the ice is browning, soon to opaque and open. She can't let go, can't help but call the county clinic every day. My parents' shot at the shot is anyone's guess. I can hear the other side of the lake in her sigh. More snow might come to bury, or it all might thaw. January is an unpredictable sink. I ask her not to step out onto the lake, just wait. It will be over soon. Faces and hugs and crying close. I thought I had a stockpile of hope enough for us all. But the sky steals itself and ice fishermen plumb invisible lines to black. Wind throttles us and hangs up, and I don't know which horizon to cast my taut prayers into.
Oh my, that really caught a lot of the pandemic. We did these Zoom calls with family, and it was really a strange time in that regard. There was family that we actually connected with who we actually don't usually connect with, you know, in that regard.
Yeah, it brought a lot of people together and back in contact that have been out of contact for sure. And my family didn't Zoom so much. It was a new technology for them, but we did have some of that. It really helped.
Right.
Especially for my parents to see their grandkids, you know, that was important.
I really like that about a lot of what's in this book are the pandemic references. So let's go on to another, day 301. So you said that you numbered the days of the pandemic.
Well, when I wrote the poems during the pandemic, I would find the number on the calendar of the day that we were in and then assign it that number. Because one, I didn't write every single day, but also I was so brain dead most of the time from work that I couldn't come up with a clever title. So I just named them day number whatever. But it also adds, I think, to that feeling that we were in where we were just counting the days, especially as we were waiting for the vaccine.
Right.
There was both a countdown and also an accumulation of days that you kept counting, you know, when was it going to be the first day that the vaccines were, when can you like reset the calendar?
I had actually kind of forgotten about that waiting for the vaccine, about that period of time when we were really stuck. And then when the vaccine came, there was really a freed up feeling for just a little while. You know, we had that happen several times where you thought that you could go out and that you were safe. And I think that by now it turned out not necessarily so.
Right. Well, there was this rollout. So I know that for our family and extended family members, different ones would get their vaccines and you'd wait for your turn. And I think something that's important about remembering this time period is that we have amnesia collectively as a culture anyways. But I've been hearing some pandemic poems lately and there's some re-traumatization happening, you know, sure, of, you know, some people are sick and getting hospitalized and being quarantined. I have a number of people that I know that are currently sick with COVID and they're fully vaccinated and boosted. But these poems and the poems that I've been hearing aren't just therapy for those that are writing them. It's really this documentation, like a historical record, because we all had such different experiences. So I think it's just really important wherever they show up to read them and to, you know, remember. So I'll read, if you're okay with it, I'll just read a few from that series.
Sure. You bet. Okay. Let's do it.
And then, yeah. Day 301. In the 10th month of the pandemic, a coin shortage and a brevity of eye contact, will we recover and uncover the half of us that completes smiles, sentences, preoccupied by loose change in our pockets, hands counting the wealth of small talk? Day 352. I hold blue in mine like salt at the edge of the glass. The margaritas I stopped ordering, the whiskeys kept from my mouth, a burning I could almost release like touch, that planet blew rounds and rounds in craved licks. The arrival gate. It all might return to us yet, the thin thought the year made, the stones skidding starstruck across thick black ice, the echo held in a spruce forest's dark weave, my mother walking through the airport, disheveled from her nap, her face bright and unmasked, her person secure.
I found the day 352 interesting because I was stuck at home. I actually got into buying a lot of alcohol. What I always say about that, it's a good thing I didn't drink at all. You know,
I found at some point I had to stop with a lot of that because it was really, you know, at the beginning, you just think we're all in this mass altering of time. And then when it became sort of permanent, things like Zoom happy hours and drinking, day drinking isn't exactly conducive to holding down jobs or parenting or, right. You know, it wasn't a functional way to go forward. So that was a little poem for that. Just like, you know, some of that's just had to like stop for a little bit.
Well, you bet. Yeah. Having worked in a lot of bar rooms, I'm very mm-hmm. aware of how destructive alcohol can be and just to life in general. So we did manage to maintain control of it.
It was a time that people were discovering how to really do self-care, and that drinking really wasn't for a lot of people self-care.
Right.
And so what does that look like, and how to actually reach for other things to help us through?
I can imagine that for some people it was very destructive.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But
I don't know. In a lot of my circles, there were a lot of people going to AA and going, being really open about what their relationship with alcohol was.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
For sure.
What I really liked was in the season of quiet alarm.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was an interesting piece.
Yeah. That's a little bit of an older piece. I wrote it when two things were happening. It was a while ago. So it was about 7 years ago that an old college friend had developed cancer and had died really quickly. We thought that she had gotten through it, but it came back really aggressively. And at the same time, there were monarch monitorings in the New England area that were sending out alarms about, you know, they couldn't find the monarchs returning from Mexico from that flyway. So that's how this poem sort of came to be. And then visually on the page, they are, you know, each stanza is set apart from each other, not just by a gap in the stanzas, but the second and subsequent stanzas are tabbed over, so aligned off center. So you just get the sense that there's two different things happening. In the season of quiet alarm for Diane. The news throttled low on radio waves, the first report of their disappearance. Spring in a Massachusetts meadow, not a monarch to be found. No lift of burnt orange rustle as a reporter steps through milkweed, recording only a raft of silence. She slipped away after only two seasons. Cancer claiming tongue, appetite, voice, invoking wings to aid in flight. Mariposa, sphinx moth, ruby throats and nightingales like grandmother's hands, fanning her forehead, straightening sheets, opening windows with unflinching care. Children run loose in the chicken yard like moons without planets, beyond the radar, tuned out from the world's quiet alarm. No one here is yet sick. Lunch is ready. Sun migrates through high noon blue on the backs of barn swallows and their unhesitant charcoaled wings. In a gleaned cherry tree, honeybees swarm like a lobe in the wind, pulsing with news scouts bring to the queen. Meadowfoam blooms in the next field, and there is a dead oak, and we have all day to course through to our brave new life.
I thought that the juxtaposition of grief from your friend and grief of what I took to be global climate change, the result of that, was really an interesting juxtaposition that you put in there.
Yeah, it appears in my poetry a lot. This one was written when my kids were little. They're teenagers now, older teenagers. So their awareness of climate change was pretty non-existent. And there was this real bittersweet weight to watching them play in this world that was changing, knowing all these things about it. You know, they had very little knowledge of death. They had known, their knowledge of butterflies were from picture books. So, you know, just holding all these truths together, and also making sure that they have their childhood intact, that they could have their own relationships with things, even if those things were quickly going to be changing and gone. I think I'll read one that you brought up, which was January 6th. January 6th. I hardly remember the peaches we opened this morning, like a celebration. The last jar from the U-pick. Some pressure and a twist of the palm to free each fuzzy orb, cleaned and packed away in honey water for the long winter. The news that Georgia had tipped blue and the day began for a change on a sweet note. Only a few more executive actions to make the world resemble a just one again. But the next news of the insurrection broke like a wave over a high wall, as if ballots were hearts whisked away in wooden boxes to safety. No one can sit still in a state like that, let alone write poetry. I did the only thing I know how to do, kept moving and took care. Drove my child home from oral surgery, swooning on pain meds and the beauty of pigeons, hurling the wires into a blur. I pulled off to a tidy side street and reapplied gauze to their socket, wipers democratic in their sweep, the radio caught between stations, more hemorrhaging than I could bear or staunch, before finding the quickest way home to feed them jar after jar of the softest and most golden, perfect foods still and suspended on the shelf.
We all had things to do that day. We talk about it a lot because I've been listening to the hearings, of course. Mm-hmm. It's just ubiquitous. January 6th, January 6th.
Yeah.
What happened in a particular day, we were just waiting because we knew what was going to take place. And then it almost seems sometimes like people are pretending that it was a big surprise, which it wasn't. I guess that what was a surprise was the level of violence. And we even had some idea that that might happen. No matter what happens, you go through your life and you do the things you got to do, right?
Yeah. Well, that day, I mean, this is another example of sort of holding my kid sort of separate from what was going on, although at the time they were about 15 or 16, and so, you know, more awake and alert to the world. But we actually were driving downtown to where the surgery was going to be and listening to the news about Georgia, you know, flipping blue. And we were just so excited. And it was this great day. And over the course of the next hour, history just turned on its head, you know, and as we were leaving, I had a chance to listen to some of the news in the car actually before, while I was waiting for the surgery to be over. So I had an inkling of what was happening already. And then I turned off the news while we drove back. So it was this weird holding of the reality of the world while my kid is blissfully on drugs. It's just another one of those juxtapositions of holding many things and making sure that, you know, you still have to care for your family, you still have to care for yourself. This poem doesn't really get into too much of that, what happened that day, but that feeling that those ballots were as precious, the cargo I was transporting.
Well, speaking of the kids, why don't we do Mama Takes a Bubble Bath?
Oh, that's got to be one of my oldest poems. And that was, it appeared in my first book, my chapbook, For the Willing. And it's a favorite of mine, even though it's an old one, because it's when they were so little. Mama takes a bubble bath. Wedge of water, slim parcel of time, body traced by clouds clotting and pulling apart, a world adrift. Porcelain suggests a leaning back, but how long legs reach this body of birth filling every space water wants. Mold in the cracks, smudges on eyeglasses, never perfect or enough. Here I rub, soften myself, pumice to heal, cloth to nape, as if tuning an instrument for what song is expected next. The children come and stand at the edge, thousands of bubbles imploding, the moment's metronome, try to comprehend how I am not on their side.
That was a real thing that happened, that you were just...
Yeah. Well, when my kids were little, you know, you don't get a whole lot of alone time. And so the bath was my alone time. And I used to spend days in the bath reading books and writing and drinking coffee and wine. Like, you know, I lived in the bath. And then to have my life be a three-poem soak, that's how it felt. You know, I got three poems in and then someone would open the door and waddle in. And the sort of wonder and mystification on their faces, how I was in this bath where I always bathed them, or I was separate. You know, I was just, what are you doing in there? So, you know, I laugh about it now, but at the time it was very much, those were hard-earned three-poem baths. I didn't feel too generous when they came in. I was like, really?
Right.
But now I miss those times. So there you go. I'll read another older one called Rising Sea Levels. Into offshore haystacks, Orion and the moon lean, and everywhere makes room for the spring tide. Even mudflats pulse and anticipate the next kiss. Fog diminishes land in a soft swoop, and waves plate their argyle retreat. The boardwalk slips under a dune, and desire is pocketed like so many whorls of jasper, murmuring in a jetty's arms between tides. A sweet, abiding swell. A whimbrel with its devoted apron of sandpipers startles us in the sharp wind. How cliche to be helpless for an off-course bird, its belly a burnished crescent above glissading suds of rime, breakers swamped at sundown. A determined wave will one day erase the spit, but all signs point which way to run. One, a narrow bridge arching over the Nastaka, flush with steelhead and dories. Or a cliff fringed with licorice ferns and salal. Neither a good handhold, but impossible not to grasp for. Or stand together in the rack line with the tattered yards of the minute and foreign, baby shoes, gull bones, tangled lure. Face whatever comes, however small on the horizon. Geese navigate the blotted night, and nothing as common as love will go extinct under the indigo sky.
Is that out of Earthwork?
It is, yeah. But it's a much older piece that I've had published in a journal. But it's an old favorite of mine. It's an old beach poem.
What is a rack line? W-R-A-C-K.
A rack line is sort of the edge of where a wave pushes the debris. So when you're walking down the beach and you'll see curvy, knotted,
yeah,
bunch of kelp and sticks and things together that's been pushed up, you know, that usually marks like a high tide line so that you can see where the tide went. That's called the rack line. And okay, rack lines can exist not just in the ocean, but they can exist like out on the playa where wind pushes debris to a certain point and bunches it up. So, yeah.
Okay.
And you asked if the sections mean anything. A lot of my very early poems are in the rack line section.
Changing Woman, Changing Man. The thing that I thought was interesting about that was that you decided to publish that yourself. I was surprised that you did it that way.
This book was kind of written really quickly at a writer's residency at Playa, which is in Southern Oregon. And it's unlike anything that I've ever written. Whole book is in long poem form with prose poems in between. So there's three sections with two voices, a woman's voice and a man's voice. And they're ordered morning, noon, afternoon, and night. There's real structure to it. And then interspersed between all of it is artwork created by one of my residency cohorts, Diane Sandahl. I gave her this manuscript because I felt like it's such long form. It's hard to read on the page if you're just reading it. There are breaks to it, but it felt like it needed something more. And when she read the manuscript, she just had all these images come up from lines from the book. So she did a few sketches, and she's a printmaker. So she created actually a print right away for it. And I said, well, how many do you think it needs? And she did a bunch, and we talked about it for a number of years. She worked on and off with it, and it came up with 11 prints for the interior. But before she created that artwork, I had sent this book around to different contests. It's a small, you know, 40 some page book. So it sort of fits in that chapbook contest submission category, but it just would get rejected. And I'm really used to rejection. It's fine. And then it was picked up as a finalist for the Newfound Prose Prize, which I thought was really interesting because it's not prose, but there are elements of prose to it. And I just felt after a long, like, you know, schlepping it around to different publishers that it just probably wasn't very marketable. And that's probably, you know, I hate to say that about poems, but it's true. You know, if a publisher doesn't think that they can sell it, or if it doesn't fit the traditional model of a book, they probably won't pick it up. And and that's fine. So I just thought, well, this book has a different purpose and a different quality to it. And then in 2019, we thought, well, we'll make this book really, really special and do a letterpress cover with some letterpress interior prints and just do it, you know, hand sewn. And then we did the budget for that. It was like well over $10,000 to do it. And we thought, okay, well, let's think of this in a different way. How can we do it a little bit more cheaply, but really honor the artwork and the effort that we had put into this book? So it feels more like an art book. and I just decided to figure out how to design and print it on by myself.
For listeners, if you want to see the pictures from this book, they're on Kristen's website.
Yeah, all those prints are actually for sale on my website, and but you can see them, you can scroll through some of them too, just to get an idea of what's in the book. But we're really happy with how it turned out. We got it out in the world. It was funded by a Kickstarter campaign, so everybody that pitched in got a copy, and we basically broke even and got the book out in the world. It's actually done under a new press that it's my own little press, so this would be my first book from my press. So
that's interesting what you said about it. It has a male and a female. Is it a back and forth between them?
By sections they are. And the idea between Changing Woman and Changing Man is that they're not necessarily binary in that traditional sense. So the poem just really explores different sides to them. That's why they can be interchangeable. They're changing. They're not necessarily, you know, masculine or feminine. So I just liked exploring.
You have something in there that you can read to us, right?
Yeah, I'll read one of the sections from the Changing Woman's voice, just to kind of show how it feels. But I'm not going to read two sections because it gets kind of like, I won't read the man and the woman because it just gets a little long. So this is from the afternoon section. To set the stage for the book, it's about these two who are looking for a place, a home in the high desert, and they find a place, but it's unoccupied. So I'm going to read the prose poem that leads into the section afternoon, and then I'll read her section. Afternoon. The house is unoccupied, but at peace. Dust devils lap at juniper slats and sift through tin shingles. Windows and doors have been left open. Anyone can find shelter while they are away. Swallows daub nests. Grit chinks the cracks. Any near-dying creature can borrow shade, water. Their agreement with each other to build a temple for light and dark to move through, free of leashes and traps, full of motes slow tagging the day. Outside trails veer toward ridges and snowpacks, following abandoned wagon passes, blazing apart, converging like streams, leaving no trace at high noon. Changing Woman. Changing Woman is a mackerel sky. She swings in the trysting tree. Her skirt breezes up. She forgets the language of ice. She finds the quickest pulse on the body and burrows. Changing Woman is a disappearing river. She faults and strikes. She is cottonwood shade. Her well is the one in all the county not spoiled. Changing Woman invites you in for a drink. She communes in the nude. She buttons up tight when the mailman knocks. She walks to great lengths to deliver a message. She chalks memos on boulders. Changing Woman heats the baking stone. Her bread rises twice. She stretches barbed wire fences. She interrogates the sun. Her skies cloud over. Her eyes drain from blue to gray. She wears fingerless gloves. Changing Woman is a tag train headed for Canada. She slow burns for winter. She craves sugar snow. She spikes her iced tea and dials an old boyfriend. She is the wrong number. Changing Woman is a party line. She is shared among her friends. Her hot dish is legendary. She staples notices of missing pets to telephone poles. She leans her ear into the wood. Her breathing is barely audible. She can feel him coming. Changing Woman needs restringing. She reaches for his hands. She is a sun-starched hawk. She hunts all day in the thermals. She spooks her prey. changing woman starves. She is the lone juniper for miles. She diverts water with a galvanized flume. Her lake bed wants to be inundated. Her grasses are riddled with shortcuts. She is an exit strategy. She has a recovery plan. Changing woman drives the cutoff. Change is her first and middle and last name. She calls herself by her nickname. She is the one woman who offended God. She smacks her gum in church. She tacks her thesis to the door. She would rather dive into a punch bowl and a bikini than hang out by the keg. Changing woman is about to die. She naps on the family plots. Her dates are rubbed by strangers. She mouths old names long out of fashion. She'll put anything in her mouth. She writes with lemon ink. She needs his match. Her secrets come to life, then burn. Changing woman is a Jenny Lind trunk. She is filled with reams. She is bound for an inland sea. Her storm front arrives late for lunch. Changing woman is a stepping stone. She ripples all the way to shore. She swan dives from the dock. Her stroke is unorthodox. She kicks crayfish out of the way. Changing woman balances a Diet Coke on her belly and floats. Her children can't hear her, and she can't hear them. Her dog paces the bank. Her barometer is falling. Changing woman is 100% chance of lightning. She runs to take in all the towels. She climbs the tallest tree with a transistor radio. She is a storm cellar all buttoned up. She prays down with the potatoes and apples and salted hams. Her formica table is plastered with playing cards and dead mosquitoes. She folds and refolds the map. Her margins are torn. Changing woman comes with a legend. She is a horizon without peaks. Her pink eraser is worn down to the nub. She is a Flatlander goat. She carries dead weight. Her apple pies are blue ribboned. She guides his hands through the latticework. Changing woman feeds fiction to the fire. She props the door open with an old dictionary. Her cranes settle at an undisclosed location. She is sure that evening follows day. Her future snakes like a fire trail. She scatters rye crumbs in the cedar swamp. She takes off her boots and bra. She unfurls. Changing woman is the pulse after he pulls away. Her scars rearrange themselves. She is a new constellation beyond the blue. She swarms 20 feet up. Her aspen is deleafed. Changing woman is done holding her breath. She is glad for the downpour. She shepherds evening in. She is siesta.
Where did you get the idea for this?
So it's almost like a poem I can't fully take credit for. It feels very much like it happened to me. But it's filled with a lot of imagery from my life or the life of, especially some of that in the afternoon section, really calls up like my mother and my grandmother's in Michigan. You know, we had a party line at our cabin and we had a formica table and my mom actually did float around the lake Diet Coke on her belly. So like, you know, just kind of calling in different personalities that I've known, but also just imagining.
Well, I thought it was really wonderful, all of those different images. I think that someone who reads it will go away maybe scratching their heads a little bit, but
that's okay.
But well, no, that's exactly okay. You know, I think that it gives you something to think about.
So Peeling Grapefruit is a pandemic poem. Peeling Grapefruit. Most about this lost pandemic year, I hope will fade. The trauma and the chaos, the uncertainty of our lives hemmed or stopped altogether. The sleeplessness and the tinny chords of exhaustion playing us, tuning us into people we sometimes don't recognize. catching our reflection in a friend's porch window. I want to hold this time as if it were a globe we pass around, take each other's burden, turn over the marks isolation scarred on our surface, or beauty still cracked through. I will not want the whole of it to pass away, though. Not the children living under one roof and under wing, coming out of their rooms after class to stand like neighbors and say, "How are you doing today?" We divide the hours like a math problem. We tease and coax and trouble and never understand the sum. What is real and what is remote? Where does mother end and child begin? Too much of the year I could not shelter them from. Somehow we still want to be together, sitting on the couch for something mindless like glee. My oldest peels a grapefruit, turning the blushing sun over and over to find the right spot to drive a nail, separate pith from taut capsules, sweeter than spooning it with sugar, sections equally divided and passed down, so quickly eaten, each of us asking for more, please. I still require my kid to peel my grapefruit.
Really?
It's too messy. And I really love it. And it's a TV couch thing that we do, especially in the winter when the grapefruits are really good. Yeah.
That's interesting because I've always been from a school that slices a grapefruit in half. Then you cut around each little piece of the grapefruit so you get it out of the membrane. And
yeah, I
like
have
that.
Those little spoons for that too, but this is a pretty fun way to eat it. And I actually like it more, but you know what I liked was that during the pandemic, I bought a giant IKEA couch for everybody to sit on because my kids had outgrown the little couch and we were spending so much time watching TV. So,
right.
Yeah. It's just a poem that's pretty special to me. It's one of those memory poems.
Right. Well, Kristen, thank you for coming to Sound Poetry. I've really enjoyed listening to your poems.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed this conversation a lot.
You've been listening to Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma, KTAH, FM 101.9. I'm Steve Niebel. We've been listening to Kristen Berger. And thanks again, Kristen, for coming to Sound Poetry.
Yeah, thank you.